Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft. It's fantasy final season. It's the all-important, all-stressful time for fantasy coaches out there. And for some of us, round 20 saw us get one step closer to the flag. And for others, the dream is over. And some people bloody won their flags this week. Definitely not Stevie Fizz. Whether you're gearing up for a grand final push or starting your 2020 planning, we've got you covered. This week, we'll discuss all the things we noticed from round 20 in the AFL. Then we have waiver wire pickups at Captain Risky for round 21 and our keeper trade of the week coming up later on. I'm Doss, and after the underwhelming job of editing last week by Stevie Fizz, our resident McLaughlin brother Cam said enough was enough. He's booted him off the show for the week. G'day, Mr. McLaughlin.
Yeah, g'day, mate. I thought that, you know, convincing my brother to get rid of AFLX in 1 week and then convincing Steve that he needs a week in the twos is probably a job well done.
That's definitely correct. And we've got Jono Crockett back after a week off. What a week. All hail Bevo. His doggies are firing. More importantly, though, have you got any teams still going strong this fantasy finals? And we need to know all the details about Stevie Fizz's downfall this week, please.
Yeah, g'day, listeners. Back from the dead. No, I got bundled out of every single finals in week one, so I'm enjoying life as it is as a free man, unless watching the Western Bulldogs hashtag Woosha out. But it is the weekend of our home league final where Stevie Fizz was the first man to go back-to-back into the grand final in the league, but it looks like he's just going to miss out on taking back-to-back titles as well. So an interesting one. He brought in Jack Graham this week, went ham in Supercoach, 168, but looks like it's not going to get him over the line. And from last I spoke to him, he was running down the streets naked of the Superior Rat, just yelling at all people coming at him. So well done to you, Andrew Costa, who won our league.
Yes, congrats on taking down the Fizz. I know that he put out Cade Simpson, I think, for one last hurrah as well, which would have gone down pretty well as well. And last, and definitely least, the Statesman is back. Smug as always. What's going on, Stato?
Back by popular demand, so giving the audience what it wants. Although this will be my last potty for the season, which, by the way, my season has been going on hashtag off-brand, might be a very strategic move.
Don't worry, Stato, I'm sure you might not be with us, but we've got the You Suck show and there's going to be plenty of your recordings for that. So your voice will still be here with us in the off-season. Don't worry about that. All right, we'll get into our round 20 review, looking at every game and all the things we noticed for your fantasy needs. First up, it was the snowy GWS Hawks game from Friday night, Statesman.
I'll give you one guess, Cam, what the first thing I noticed from this game.
Whoa, one guess. Don't even have one. What game are we talking about?
It's embarrassing to you because Toby Green is a fucking gun. Will you ever learn this one? And with Hopper out with a hamstring, and we know hamstrings aren't 1 week, and now Timmy T, who spent the last 10 to 15 minutes on the bench with apparently a bit of ice on his hammy as well. It looks like his mid-roll will continue. So that'll give the owners huge rewards in finals. The question will be if he remains with forward status in all formats. So approximately a 50-50 split for the season, but if weighted for the second half of the year, he will struggle to meet the 35% quota. Your thoughts, Jen? Do you reckon that Toby Green will remain a forward for 2020?
How many games did he miss out earlier? It was about 4 or 5, was it? So I think they'll take that into part as well and allow him the forward status, because we're going to lose a lot of gun forwards next year, I think.
Actually, I think he'll keep it. What I'm really excited about, though, is how hype he's going to be in the preseason next year. I reckon he'll go way too early in every single draft, just because all the mids are going to be back, and he'll probably go back to that forward role.
Well, what
if he's maybe not so much of a gun?
What if we see Canelio leave, though? Does that change your mind as well?
Oh, maybe. I think they've probably got enough developing in there that they... I mean, look at the score from this week, right? He's their primary midfielder, and they lost to the Hawks by, like, 60 points.
Yeah,
sure, he puts up stats, but...
Yeah, I get what you're saying, though. What do you think, Statesman? I mean, if he does get the... Do you think he'll get forward status, first of all? I think it's going to be a tough call, isn't it, whether or not they think... Is it weighted in the decision what the role going forward is likely to be, or is it purely just data, you know, percentage-wise?
Well, we've found a few times that if they haven't met their quota, that becomes the reason or the rationale why they don't have DPP. But you have seen at times when they've changed position in the second half of the year that they've actually just got what their position was for the second half of the year. So that's why I'm questioning it. The end of the day, I think the reason why Toby Green became a forward is they were lacking that intensity in the forward half, first and foremost, and they had a million, and I mean a million, midfielders. That is slowly reducing. Treloar's gone, Miles has gone, Shield's gone, Cogs has gone, apparently. So all of a sudden, they've had to call on him. Obviously, Ward is out injured, Hopper's still developing, Timmy T needed that support. But I think what they're finding now, that they've actually got some small forwards that can do a job. Hill looks damn exciting. So they've got more that to cover what he had to fill in for, but now they're seeing of how important he is in the midfield. So I think there's a fair chance that he will continue to get midfield time going forward. It may not be as a concentrated mid because he can create something up forward if they require it per game. So I think there is options there, but when you're that good in the midfield, at the end of the day, he's a Jet. He's a fucking gun, some would say. I think they're going to look at him to be in that position. The next thing that I noticed from the game is I'm back on the Chad train. He's taken a long time at the Hawks, but they took him away, got him fit. They're to the levels that they desire, and I think that the owners, especially who held on very patiently throughout this year, will be reaping rewards in 2020. Due to his average and his injury history, you should be able to pick him up with a bargain pick. So unlikely to pick up at F1 or F2 next year. So I think if you're getting around the round 9, 10 or 11, you may be able to pick up Chad Wingard as a very valuable pick. And last but not least, even though the Hawks belted the Giants, the GWS defence still racked them up against the Hawks. So I think you need to look at that. Stream players against the Hawthorn forward line, they score points.
All right, and just a couple of quick questions regarding a few of both the teams here. Now, Jai Caldwell, what did you see from him in his first game, Statesman? Bit of a keeper question there.
Yeah, it was an interesting one that he got to start in the midfield in his first ever game. Started quite well, racked up quite a few. He is a bull. He is going to be quite a good player, but he really died out of the game. So I was interested with that move, to be honest. I would have expected with Hopper out that Perryman would have got the shot in the midfield, but they seem to really rate him in defence. Scored a ton, but that's part of defensive players against Hawthorn. But look, I think he's good for the keepers. He's not a redraft player yet.
And for next year in 2020, does Harry Perryman come into calculations for our defensive sort of, what range do you think he'll actually be going? Because I know you're pretty high on him, but as a defender next year, he'll retain that status because he is playing there. What do you see him in 2020?
It's all about role. I think he's been a little bit disappointing once they put him in defence, this week aside. I rate him really highly, but he's a ball magnet, through that midfield role. So when he goes to Neefel, he just smashes it, but he plays in the midfield. So this year we've seen him play a wing role, a bit inside, and when he's done that, he's scored quite well. Not smashing it, but giving us a good honest 70, 80 and 90s. When he's played in defence, he's more got to that average of the high 60s, low 70s. One out of the box this week. I think he's a good player. If you actually looked at it, and me being an owner, he was running to get the easy ones, a Rory Laird type, but they just weren't utilising. They were bombing it long. So he has got the game style. He's got the thinking of racking them up and getting the plus sixes, but they just don't utilise him.
All right, I think we'll get on to the Melbourne-Collingwood game with Cam.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some Brayshaw owners out there who are thinking they're getting maybe a little bit of an uptick at just the right time. He pumped out a respectable 106 AFL fantasy points. Not so good in Supercoach with just the 78 in that format. And because DOS and Statesman, we outnumber the Supercoach lads on the show, I can actually say the inferior format.
Correct.
It'll come out in the weekly CBA article that DOS puts together on Wednesdays, but there was a stark difference between the Petraka Brayshaw attendances this week, actually shifting about 25% in favour of Brayshaw. So on the surface, that looks like great news for owners, but unfortunately there's four different things that make me think he won't back it up next week. The first is that even though he had a higher CBA attendance, he still had the lowest time on ground for the Melbourne mids with a paltry 73%. So it was likely just circumstantial that he attended so many bounces. He went missing in the third term, which we know Simon Goodwin loves, when the game was there to be won. He ended up with just two kicks and a handball for the quarter, and actually it stretched further into the second quarter. It was like from the 20th minute of the second quarter he was just kind of missing. Despite his high CBA attendance, he didn't manage a centre clearance at all, and he had the second highest amount of clangers in the game. Right, so all of those things make me think that it might just be a bit of a flash in the pan for Brayshaw this week.
I'm pretty keen on Brayshaw for next year, and I'm putting it down to just Melbourne being absolutely horrendous over the preseason. They had every player going for surgery. They never got any sort of momentum going. So I'm pretty actually bullish on Melbourne players for next year, especially Brayshaw, where no one's going to draft him. So I'm going to be able to swoop in on him in the middle of my draft, round 13, something like that. And he could certainly pop again to be that 105 player and be laughing all the way to the bank. What do you guys think on that?
Well, I was going to actually ask you guys as well, like, what player from this season do you think is a good comparison for Gus Brayshaw heading into 2020? Is someone like maybe a Brad Crouch who had like, this? It's different, but he had years off with injury, but he had that massive upside. We know that Gus Brayshaw has the upside should he put it all together, as well as maybe we've sort of had speculation, pure speculation, that maybe he's carrying an injury and with the low time on ground. I mean, is Brad Crouch a good comparison of the range where if we see him sort of pop up in preseason and look really good, that he might go in that sort of range next year? Or, yeah, I don't know. Cam, what do you think?
I'm unsure. Like, I always said with Brayshaw this year that I really wanted to see if he could do it again, and he just... We know that at points per minute, he is peak-like. Like, he can put out some serious figures, but just how... I don't think Goodwin knows how to use him, and that makes me nervous about not just the rest of this season, but next season and every season after. Because he seems pretty certain with, you know, Harms, Viney, even to a lesser extent, Salem, Petraka, but then Brayshaw's kind of a big question mark.
Statesman, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know where I sit with Brayshaw, to be honest. It's been one of those years where I was expecting a lot, not much has happened, and I'm trying to work out why that's the case. So he's one of those at the moment, I think I'm going to remain cold on him and let someone else take the punt.
Yeah, and it probably seems like Jono's saying what he's saying, and that he's going to be drafting him a lot and finding him sort of later in draft if we've got, you know, a few people thinking that he might, you know, get the chance to do that. So take the punt next year, Jono, see what happens. Did you see anything else in that game, Cam?
No, that was the main thing. The other thing was, I guess, Pendles had a bit of an uptick in the CBA attendance as well. It didn't really translate to a much bigger score. And I guess it's just interesting that Collingwood can only barely get over the Demons at this point. I mean, that's indicative of how far they've slipped.
yeah, definitely struggling in the latter part of this year with all their depth of injuries that they're having at the moment. All right, we'll get on to the Port Adelaide-Sydney Swans game and the Statesmen. Your Swans struggling at the moment.
Certainly are. Boak was tagged to great effect by Hewitt this week, although it didn't help the Swans on the scoreboard. Tagging seems to be back on their agenda. And I think you just got to be careful with your teams here and just watch out. We know they've got the double tagging option there. It seemed to be off the radar for about a month or so, but back in play this week, and it really affected his score. Although I will say for poor old Boak owners, who at that stage he had been the number one forward for the year. 0 goals, 4 points is not a good output for someone that can keep a forward status option in the future. So missed out on a potential 20 points there. As discussed a few weeks ago, Oliver Florent is a keeper sleeper. Maybe this statement woke him up a little bit earlier than what we were hoping, but 91 points last week and 113 this round, but at only 53% ownership. He is worth picking up off the waiver wire, especially in a keeper if he's available in your league. Do want to apologise to the author, but I did see a tweet over the weekend regarding the score impact on Jake Lloyd since Doss's boy Jaden Dawson has moved into defence. It was approximately 20-point loss per game. Dare I say, Doss, doesn't look like it has worked out for either player, because with 4 sub-90 scores for Dawson in his past 5 games as well, it looks like that positional change is not really working with him.
Well, yeah, he should be playing pure midfield, and it's time hashtag horse out. Unfortunately, he's just got re-signed, so we're not going to see that happen anytime soon. Yeah, just so you reckon that's a thing heading forward as well, Statesman. You're a bit concerned with Jake Lloyd, but do we see, I mean, going forward in terms of next season and beyond, I do see Jordan Dawson really playing more of an influential role, whether it's on a wing or in the midfield, and I wouldn't be too concerned for Jake Lloyd, but he has had a fantastic season, and if he's dipping a little bit, come finals time, it is frustrating for owners.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see who goes into the midfield mix next year, because of course Callum Mills seems to be playing key defensive post. Then the next week he's up forward as well, so I don't know how they're going to balance all that out, but we'll just have to wait and see what they look like in pre-season. So there will be some bargains at the Swans, but it just depends on their roles.
I do want to talk about Boak as well. I think he's one in 2020 that I'm just not going to be drafting at all. Like almost, I don't know if it was a career year, but it was close. It's been close to a career year for Boak at his age. And do you think people are going to be taking him? I suppose, though, next year he will be a pure midfielder, though. So I guess he won't be on draft radars either.
Yeah, and I think he'll get back to that sort of mid to high 90s average. But the one thing that Port will do was put more trust in the kids and give them more time in there. And I think there's also, if Ollie Wines is fully fit, it's going to hurt one or two of those inside midfielders as well, because I think they need to change their mix in there. I think they need a bit more pace.
And can we quickly talk about DBJ, Darcy Byrne-Jones? I think we've talked more about Dan Houston due to his potential upside playing in the midfield, and he probably does have a higher upside. But DBJ has been just super solid quietly this season, particularly after the buys as well. Have you liked his game so far, Statesman?
Yeah, I've got him in quite a few of my teams, to be quite honest with you. I've always actually liked him, but it was a bit of a problem with they seem to have about 16 halfback flankers in that team. So actually, yeah. Houston going out has given him a bit of job security. So it's a good sign for him. And I know it's been a little bit up and down, but I've liked what I've seen out of Riley Bonner. So he's finally becoming into the scorer we've been hoping for as well. It is a job security issue because, of course, they've got the goat in Broadbenders well in that defensive half.
All right. Well, if Stevie Fizz was here, he would definitely be blaming the umpires for this one. It is the Suns got taken down by the Lions due to the... It was definitely the rub of the green that got this one over the line for the Lions. But Cam, what did you see in this game?
I'm just really excited because, you know, in a year where everything I touch has absolutely turned to shit, I actually got something right. So Jared Lyons got wind of the Captain Risky pick from last week and went absolutely bananas, lodging a 158 AFL Fantasy and 142 Supercoach.
Now, can we just hold it there 1 second? This has never happened before. We don't do self-praise on this podcast.
Well, that's why it's probably going to be part of the You Suck show, to be honest. But I'll tell you what, Jared Lyons has been on a great run of late. Like, looking into it a little bit more, he's averaging 119.8 over the last five games in AFL Fantasy and a massive 128 over the same period in Supercoach. But interestingly enough, and keen observers will note, that this corresponds directly to a drop in McLuggage output, averaging 80 AFLF Fantasy and 91 Supercoach over the same period. And prior to that 5 weeks, Clugger was averaging 92 AFL Fantasy and high 90 Supercoach. So a bit of a role change for both of them, with Lyons looking to be the beneficiary there and potentially going into next year as well. Lads, the Lemons experiment may be over. Took was the tagger of choice this week on Lachie Neale and really kept his output and influence quite low. And he had low fantasy scores as a result. Took's took a drop as well. So I just keep an eye on Lemons' involvement over the next couple of weeks. If he's not named, which is a pretty high possibility because he wasn't influential, basically did nothing if he wasn't tagging. I'd probably expect Took to sit mid-80s with Lemons not tagging. Stevie Fizz called out Jared Berry as being a buy-low target for keepers last week, and even though they were only versing a bunch of witches hats, he looked really good and pumped out his highest score of the year in both formats. If you got the deal done, great. If not, you might be waiting until the score is forgotten to get something moving, because it looked like a something of things to come for Berry. And finally, Anthony Miles, owners will be pleased to hear that the Suns did not report his ankle injury that hampered him the entire night. But, you know, that being said, the Suns generally have no idea about anything, so who knows if he's injured or not.
And Jack Bowes, was he... I mean, his scores were pretty solid. You would have been able to pick him up off the wire or just the free agency the last few weeks. Probably not anymore, but he'd still be available in some of your shallower leagues, I'd imagine. But how is he looking out there? Really nice numbers from him.
Yeah, really nice numbers. He looked really good. I think he ended up with 7 contested disposals and the 3 clearances as well. So definitely, you know, considering how young he is, I think he's going to be impressive next year. He will likely just be a mid, so something to consider, but there's no reason to think he can't have a very solid season next year.
I do want to throw to all three of you now, and it was something you just brought up before on your Captain Risky pick from last week, Jared Lyons. I just want to talk about him for 2020. If you had to pick one of the two scenarios here, would you be more cautious in 2020 due to the youth coming through that could take his spot, like your McCluggages and your Berries? Or would you be more, considering that he's going to be a Jet next year with the way he's come home this season? What's sort of the more likely scenario? And do you think he might be drafted too high or maybe be a little bit of a bargain if he's going to hit those straps? I'll maybe start with Statesman.
I'm going to say this with a tinge of saltiness. He's going to be a bust next year.
Wow. Oh. Big call from the Statesman. Pure salt, though. Jono, what do you think?
Draft late or buy later in the season, because he seems to be one of those players who goes ham in this after the buy rounds and then doesn't do much pre-buy rounds, if that makes sense.
Is that because the team has a full complement at the beginning of the year, and as a few injuries hit, he starts earning the position? Or is it just he's a inside mid, so therefore he comes to the fore when the winter months come?
It could also be the fact they've also got a young midfield brigade there as well. I mean, we've spoken about McCluggage, Berry in that there, so maybe next year these guys take the next step that throws him out of that midfield where, as you predict, he's going to be a bust.
I actually think just maybe earlier on the season they just didn't He was new to the club. Like, maybe they just didn't know where to play him. And so for the first maybe eight rounds, it was sort of a, where do we play him? But after then, he's actually been pretty good. And I kind of have a rule whereby, you know, 27 years old to 28 is probably your prime-ish for your fantasy output, give or take a year. But he's going to be 28 next year. I think he's potentially going to be good. And I will take Statesman Salt and put it in my team.
Brilliant. And therefore, what you're saying is I'm due to hit my fantasy prime in about 2 or 3 years, Cam.
give or take 50 years.
Yeah, well, I like your point, though, Cam. That's what I was going to say. It's like, you got to remember, this is his first year at the Lions because, I mean, we kind of forget that he did just get there. So maybe that's just the fact he's come home strong. But it will be interesting. He's just not a sexy fantasy name to draft either. So I think he'll just be going later in drafts anyway.
Exclusive. DOS has just credited someone above the age of 22 as doing well at fantasy football. Congratulations, DOS. That's the first time.
Wow, it is the first time this season. Come in round 21. All right, we'll go to the Essendon Dogs game. Jono, a huge win for your doggies. You're pumping the fist. You're excited. Tell us about this game.
Yeah, sorry, I just got to get rid of the tissues and moisturizer here because, as we all know, I hate Essendon with a passion and it's probably the second best day of my life. No, but it was all over after pretty much half time, but what I did notice is Timmy English, I thought he was pretty much cooked after the bye rounds, but he has come back with a vengeance and he is going to be in talks, maybe not next year, but the year after or the year after that as a top five ruckman. Scored the 99 AFL Fantasy, 105 Super Coach. Mind you, he was up against Zach Clark, but he gets around the ground, takes contested ball and contested marks and can go forward and kick a goal. Look, it's going to be a very small chance he gets a forward status, but with a lot of players losing that forward status next year, gee, I'd love to see him get it, and that would bump him right up my rankings for next year. And the other thing was Josh Dunkley. Him in the team without Liberatore is a good thing. He just seems to score better each and every week with Liber out, because one thing I've noticed when Liber is in that team, him and Dunkley seem to be sharing the midfield roles in the CBA, so Dunkley's CBAs do take a little bit of a hit. But with Liberat this week, he was in there for 82% of the times, went full ham. So hashtag Liberat, go to another team, we'll sit in the forward line, whatever, because we want Dunkley in that midfield. And Essendon were absolute pus, and there's literally nothing to say about them because they've been smashed by injuries and they've got nothing. They will be lucky to make finals.
Hold the phone, Mason Redmond.
Oh God! Why did Essendon start Zach Merritt on the bench and him have the least time on ground in the first quarter?
Well, he was playing wing. He only took two CBAs up until halftime. Zach Merritt, he's their best midfielder, and only two CBAs up until halftime. That is just an absolute crime. And in between that, he's playing on a wing on Lachie Hunter. Lachie Hunter's going to run rings around him all day long. And they've got blokes like Myers, Fantasia, Tippin Woody, Langford, all in the midfield. I just honestly had no idea what Wisher was doing. They just had no cohesion as to what they were doing for the midfield. I mean, the Dogs used five blokes in the midfield the whole games. The Bombers used nine midfielders just to try and find the right togetherness, I suppose. But we've seen with the Dogs that now they've got McRae, Bont, Dunkley, they've been winning games, whereas Essendon have just been all over the shop.
Yeah. I will say with Merritt, though, he hasn't actually been, like, he's been less in the midfield than you'd expect in terms of taking centre bounce attendances. So he actually has played, like, it wasn't necessarily hugely surprising. I think some of the stats you told me about the centre bounces, which you've done the data for that for this week in the article on Wednesday. But Zach Merritt sort of doesn't tend to always spend a lot of time in the midfield, and he has been spending some time on the wing lately because I have been charting him for a while, and it's been something that I have noticed, him not spending huge amount of times in the guts. But obviously what you're saying, I mean, he scored huge and they did put him in there in the second half. So maybe going forward, like you said, he's their best midfielder. Statesman, what's going to happen with Merritt going forward?
Well, I hope they utilise him more. My main question was, why start him on the bench and why give him 16 minutes of game time the first quarter, the least amount of game time out of any player in the first quarter? It doesn't make sense to me when he's probably the best ball user that they have.
Mm. Yeah, it's quite shocking. I mean, it's the same dilemma we have sometimes. Well, what we were thinking earlier in the year with Angus Brayshaw, I suppose, just what's going on. 70%, 60% game time. At least Merritt did spend more in the second half, but it's strange. Now, with what you were saying with Tim English, Jono as well, absolutely full on agree with you with this one. And I got to say, last week was when I first sort of, I saw him become the ruckman he's going to be in the future. And it was against Steph Martin in the ruck contest. And literally, Steph Martin just couldn't do anything. He was looking at English, just waiting for him to do the tap. And like, he was going up and just, he had this look on his face that he just knew he was going to get smashed. And I think English going forward, like you're saying, it's not going to be too long before he is just a top five ruck that we're going to be picking up. And his signs for him are fantastic. Mm. I will ask you as well, Jono, Toby McLean, I know this was a blowout, but is there some signs, and like, if you've got a rancid keeper team like me, would you consider just keeping him for next year and just see what happens?
Yeah, look, he's not going to be the F1 that we all predicted that we thought he was going to be this year, but the way the Doggies play, he's going to still put up some solid numbers. I think he's playing as a lockdown type forward, but still pushing up on that wing, so that in vogue term that we're using, high half forward. So he's pushing up into the midfield, gets a few possessions, gets a few tackles, but still able to kick goals. Sure, he's not going to average you 95, but he still might push that 85 bracket, which is still pretty handy for F4, F3 even, depending on how we look to see the forwards next year. So I'd be holding on to Toby McLean, because even when he came in a couple of weeks ago, he still scored pretty well.
Yeah, and then he just got injured, and now he's back to that form. So it's good to see. All right, Cats North, Statesman, what did you see here?
Yeah, thanks for making me sit down and watch that game from start to go. That's great. What I noticed is having 16 rucks on your list doesn't mean you have a good one. Goldie dominated. Stanley was a good stopper early in the year, but his athletic ability looked like he was going to work really well with the new rules. But as the winter has set in, it's the big boys, excuse the pun, that are showing us that they're the best in the biz. Ruck merry-go-round is going to happen again during the off-season. Both GWS and Geelong, both are in the premiership window, and both need a match-winning ruck or at least a big body to help them through those winter months in preparation for finals. So it's a real concern in that ruck department. Any answer on that one, Cam?
Not really. Like, I completely agree with you. I'd take anyone far out. Just bring back Sean Greek. We'll take Sean Greek.
It's the most used sentence to me. I completely agree with you. Second up, Luke Dalhouse needs to average 177 in his last two games for Cam not to give Doss a few pinos. If you see, I conceded and claimed in one sentence there. And just to verify, Luke Dalhouse's highest ever score is a 132.
No, I think he's still got it. I think he's still got it.
Do I know what I need for Ablett to average 100 for the next couple of weeks?
I think it's a little bit lower actually after his 115, I think it was this week.
117, so I'm not that I'm counting, but yep.
Yep. And Cam, with regards to keepers, who in the Cats lineup do you think has the upside to stash? And the reason why I'm asking, it's actually looking reasonably thin at the moment.
Yeah, my go-to at the moment is Quinton Narkle. And he looked awesome stints through the midfield in this game. He really held his own. He was clever by foot. I'm a little bit cold on Parfitt at the moment. I think this should have been his season, but he was just not so good. And then you've got the other sort of small forwards that may have stints in the midfield, like Myers and Atkins. I agree. Ugh, I hate to agree with you, but I do agree with you again.
Most used sentence. I said it before.
The answer is Lockie Fogarty. Jono, what's your thoughts?
On.
Oh, he just has a still picture of his hand up in the air. So we're all going, yes, Jono,
So the Skype call that we're on right now has got Jono frozen, holding his arm up as if he's about to ask a question. So Jono has nothing to say on this regard, but we will move on if you've got nothing else to say. Blitzarves, is this going to keep going as him being the ruck, though? They did get a nice win here, and if we do see that, he's clearly a guy we can play for the last few weeks.
I don't know who the answer is, and that's the problem. So I can't say that that's what they're going to go through. I think it'll be a matchup basis of who their ruckman's going to be, and that seems to be the case. I don't know if Stanley's injured or they've just felt that the matchups for the last couple of weeks didn't suit him.
I mean, it's going to be an awesome stream, especially for your shallower leagues where he's still available. If they do, just check the list to make sure that he's going to be that pure ruck, because he's been scoring awesome when he does play ruck himself, even if it's fantasy and particularly the super coach. All right, on to the second to last game of the round. Oh, no, third last. Oh, we've still got plenty left to go. Saints, Dockers, Jono, what did you say?
It looks like Hannah's, Seb Ross and Jack Stephen can all play together in the one team. I think it's the first time we've seen them this year. They all scored pretty well, with Hannabury and Stephen pushing forward a little bit in this game. They kicked a couple of goals each, combined for 5 goals between them. Seb Ross was the constant again in that midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the draft period. We know Jack Stephen requested a trade last year to go to Geelong. Whether he goes again next year for this year, we'll see again. But they had a pretty good midfield click going. Dunstan was still in there, scoring all pretty well. But moving on to the Freo ruck department, I've been banging on this for the last couple of weeks. They cannot continue to play Sanderlands and Darcy in that same team. We know Sanderlands is about 470 years old and come to the end, but it's Sean Darcy's time, and Sean Darcy needs to grow on his own. Like we've seen with the Saints, they've let Rowan Marshall just flourish, and he's been probably top 5 ruckman for the year. They need to do that with Sean Darcy. We know he can get around the ground, we know he can get the hit outs, so let Sean Darcy flourish. And Hunter Clark, this kid is an absolute gun. He does have the defender status this year, but the question is, does he keep it for next year? We know he has been spending a bit of time in that midfield, but man, if he's got that defender status next year and Brett Ratton's coaching, all things come up Hunter Clark for 2020.
He will have the status, I reckon, because he's really not playing that much in the midfield. He's quite a lot down back and still scoring great. He's just sweeping it up in the back line and doing the centre bounce attendances as well. It's not a great amount of deal of time that he spends in there. I didn't do this game yet, or I don't know who's on that game.
I will be
game,
doing that, but I haven't done it yet, no.
Yeah. He doesn't really spend that much time in the midfield, at least from the last few weeks. He does definitely get a little stint in there or two, but he's playing defence, and I think he'll keep the defender status for next year, which means, you're right, it's Clark season. I'm also all about Josh Battle for next season as well. Do you like what you see there, Jono?
Depends on what players come back. I mean, we don't know much about Robertson. They're missing another defender who I can't think off the top of my head. So they do have a couple coming back where Battle fits in. I do like him, but I do like the one above him, but I can't think of his name right now. We're not with the shoulder injury this year. Did well last year. If someone can help me out, that'd be great. But
it'll Jimmy Webster?
No, not Webster. Young fella. Don't worry, okay, it'll come back to me, but yeah. No, not Caulfield. Hasn't
Caulfield did hurt his shoulder in this one. Actually, Caulfield's another one that just looks pretty cool for next year, but definitely
Austin,
way
Logan
more
Austin
under the radar.
That's the one I'm looking for. I do like Austin ahead of Battle.
Yeah. All right, Blues, Tigers. Cam, what'd you see in that one?
Yeah, the first thing was Jack Ross for your keepers. I think he looks like a great player, and they used him You know, really good development from Hardwick, but using him in a run with Rolon Cripps was a really good learning experience for him, I think. He's only 22% owned on Ultimate Footy, which actually really surprises me given the amount of keeper leagues on the platform. I think if he's available, he could be one for you to keep going forward in your deep leagues. Jack Graham, I think someone mentioned it earlier that he was a very good stream this week, and I think Stevie Fizz got on him in his final, but he went absolutely ham because Dusty was out, and he laid like 140 tackles or something. 14. And two marks, three handballs to 19 kicks, so a fantastic ratio there for an inside mid. Lots of contested disposals. I think he does have a fantasy game. It's just whether or not he's going to be he's probably an average player at best, and therefore may lose out to some of the young developing talents at Richmond. I think David Teague maybe got a little bit touched up as from a coaching perspective in this game, so it was pretty wet at times, and he chose to play the three talls at forward, and it really meant that Carlton struggled to score in the first probably quarter. I think they only scored their first goal in the second quarter as a result of the slippery conditions, which generally don't favour the talls. And finally, it's good to see Cade Simpson's giving his sleeves a last hurrah. While rumours swirl over his playing future, it's great to see him putting out a retro score in retro round. What did you guys think of retro round as a idea?
Didn't even know it was a thing.
Same here, to be honest.
Good job, AFL, promoting their shit.
And Statesman, no comment from the retro man himself.
He's out there in a safari suit in the Stato, just rocking it really well, I reckon, back in the day.
What do we see from Toby Nankervis in his return to fantasy footy? I actually, shout out to me, I played the Port Adelaide Ruckman.
Shout out to me.
Seriously, Peter Laddams got around him over the Nank, and what a decision it was. But Lad Hams, what did you see from the Nank in this game, Cam?
I think this is what we expected from him earlier in the season, because he was pretty putrid earlier on this year. We all kind of thought that, you know, the more mobile ruckman would be a little bit more successful this year, and ruckmen that don't necessarily need hit outs would thrive. But he was very good, like completely passable as a ruck, and he gave first service to the mids, which is great. Like, I wouldn't expect him to win the taps, but he over Cruiser, he was quite passable. I think it was a differential of about 12 hitouts between the two. So pretty good.
All right, no worries. And we'll get on to the final game with Jono, and we are recording a little earlier than we usually do, so it's only three-quarter time in the Eagles-Crows game as we are recording on Sunday. But Jono, what are you seeing so far in this game?
Yeah, Matty Crouch has certainly got himself captain in his home league final because he has knocked the shit out of Rory Sloan and he's off the ground. So bad luck if you're a Rory Sloan owner. Matty Crouch, kudos to you. You've finally put a score together. No, just kidding. Is Luke Shuey an underrated midfielder? I know we talk about the greats and that, but this guy's had a really good fantasy season, but he seems to be one of those players we always pick up later in our draft as that M5, M6 afterthought. Is there any chance he can go higher next year? Not having a great game this week, but throughout the year, he's had a pretty consistent season.
It's an interesting question.
He is number one tag target.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Ahead of Yo, you think?
Yes.
Yep.
That's why I said number one tag target. But anyway,
you broke up a little bit there, but that's okay. You just old and mumble, so that's fine. Source Jacobs, he might only be getting a game to up his trade value for next year. I think the Statesman said GWS is looking for a ruckman, and there could be a bit of a deal going on there because we have seen Riley O'Brien score pretty well this year without Source Jacobs. We know he's there with
Port
the
doing the same thing
with Lysette. They've got Lysette there and playing Ryder.
Playing Ryder and
Laddams
over Lysette.
My, you know what, my boy, Laddams.
No, that's a good point. They get the value up so they can get something from the trade period. I can certainly see that. So it could be both Adelaide teams vying for a trade with the GWS next year. Certainly one, because we do know Riley O'Brien has been scoring particularly well. But if Sauce Jacobs stays next year at the Crows, what is going to go with Riley O'Brien? Do people overdraft him based on his average, or do you think people are smarter than that and just let it slide?
Looking at the list profile, Adelaide need to move now. Now, they've got a replacement at the right age. 24 years of age is a ruckman. You just back him in. I would suggest, while he's got good legs and good footy left in him, and a couple of clubs are really seriously having a crack at a premiership, need ruckman, I'll be getting the value. And GWS, they have some picks, boy.
Yep.
There you go.
And you're not seriously, though, with Port and Adelaide, they're both vying for finals contention. You can't be trade valuing when you're in the finals chance, can you? Is that a thing?
Well, you trade Ryder and Jacobs out. You still got Lysette and O'Brien there.
No, but I mean, like, they're contending this year to get in the finals. Like, you can't be like, oh yeah, we'll just show off this guy as we try and get into seventh positions.
Adelaide won't make finals.
Jacobs and O'Brien aren't going to be too much difference in their games today, but O'Brien is the future.
All right, we've got waiver wire pickups, Captain Risky, and a Keeper League trade of the week to come. First, though, Jono, we're closing in on 230 iTunes ratings. Remind me what your tasks will be when we hit that milestone.
Well, 230 coming up very quickly. It will be smashing my face into some peanut butter. Now, we're going to put a Twitter poll out here for the listeners. Do they want me to see it just plate on the bench, smash my face into it? Or do they want to see me the old comedy style, smash the plate into my face style of peanut butter? I'm open here. I'm happy to do what the listeners want me to see. Throw some hot chili chips in there while doing a streak on the MCG on grand final day. So put it out there on the Twitter poll. Tell me what you want me to do, and I will certainly do it.
All right.
But we do have one review this week. It is from David Howley, and his title is Useful Outside of Draft as Well, and just says thanks. So he must be using us for his daily fantasy sports to track those CBAs. So thank you, David Howley, and hopefully you continue to listen throughout the off-season.
Thank you. And some waiver wire pickups now, only using players with under 65% ownership on Ultimate Footy. We'll start with you again there, Jono. And who have you got for us this week?
My number one target this week is Timmy Membry in 58% of the leagues. They are playing Carlton next week, where he does average a juicy 88 Supercoach and 73 AFL Fantasy. So looking to grab Timmy Membry in my league. Aaron Sanderlands is up against the Bombers over there in Perth in 53% of leagues. We saw what Timmy English did against Zach Clark, so therefore Sandy, who arguably a better ruckman, should absolutely destroy Zach Clark. Sean Darcy, 72% for those who are interested, and any single Hawthorn player you can find. They are up against the Gold Coast Suns this week and will be probably out of finals contention, but we'll be looking to push anyway. So defenders, as we know, score well against the Suns as well as the forwards. So stream any Hawthorn players, and that's about it for me.
All right, Cam, what pickups do you have for this week?
I actually had the crab memory as well, but I'll throw in Taylor DeRay. I think he scored pretty well when he had a little bit of a run a couple of weeks ago. Now that Crozier is a little bit injured and Daniel's hammy not so good, I'd suggest that DeRay is probably going to slot into that Daniels role pretty handily. And today, he went about, 91 points, which is pretty handy. And then finally, from a keeper perspective, again, lock away Narkle. I really think he's going to be quite good. Only in 13% of your teams. Get on it.
Was that Narkle's like first game this year or close to it? Has he been just injuries? No,
he's been playing. He was injured early in the year and then he couldn't break into the side, so he played in the VFL for most of the year. He'll be going into his third year next year. Very interesting.
Righto, and Statesman, what have you got?
Mentioned him before, Oliver Florent, 53% owned, 91 and 113 his last 2 weeks, and up against Melbourne in round 22, so it could be a juicy day on the wing for him. And last but not least, Bailey Dale, 41% owned, forward mid from the Bulldogs, hashtag better Bailey. Scores of 80, 89, 58 and 94 in his last 4 games back in the team. Better Bailey.
And no, definitely not. Definitely not. Bailey Smith is the better Bailey. Bailey Williams, a close second. Now, I'll just give you a couple,
not in the team.
Couple just over 70% because there is those shallow leagues. And Jed Anderson has slipped to just above 70% back in the team this week, playing really well. And Jack Bowes is just over 70% as well. So, I mean, if you're in a league that doesn't have quite so many players, might be useful to grab those guys as well. Also, I mean, we got to just say probably just any Hawthorn players against the Suns next week as well. And, I mean, do we go any Docker against the Dons as well, maybe, depending on how rancid they are next week. So anyway, those are some teams, matchups, plays you can go with. We've got our trade of the week now, and generally now we focus on the keeper league, seeing as obviously some single seasons are actually already finished, like your Stevie Fizz, who lost. We will remind you that he did lose his grand final. But who's your trade of the week for us this week? Cam, is it, that's doing the trade of the week for us?
Yeah, I think I am. And this is more from, and it's a bit of an inexperience from my perspective, from a keeper perspective. So guys, throwing this one out there, Cade Simpson as trade of the week for a sell. He's had an uptick in the last couple of games to prove that he's still got the legs. And there's rumours that he's going to sign a 1-year deal at Carlton next year. I mean, if you're already gone, get rid of him.
Why would Sam you keep Doherty him going? Do to... next year?
Oof. Yeah,
probably. Yeah, I still think if you're going to sell Simpson, now's probably the time.
Man, who's going to take him though? Like a contender for next year wouldn't even take him, I don't think, because they'd be like, well, what if he drops me a 70 like he did for the 90% of the year? I think he's just playing awesome.
Or he drops a retirement bomb at the end of the year.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be very happy to sell Cade Simpson to any of you guys who want him. I am a proud owner of the man and not
I've
in
got
finals.
Luke Hodge in my keeper league, happy to trade.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now we're going, unfortunately, back to the Statesman for his Captain Risky after Cam, of course, nailed it last week. So you better live up to the hype this week, Statesman. Who have you got as a Captain Risky for round 21?
Well, thank you for stealing my thunder. A big well done to Cam for picking the highest score of the week. Not just a good Captain Risky, but the highest score of the week in Jared Lyons, 158. And I obviously have a question. How did he help you with your finals this week, Jono? Oh, sorry, silly me. You didn't make the finals.
Savage. We've already covered this at the start of the show. No need to bring up old wounds.
Yeah, no, I enjoy it. Steve's been very persistent with streaming defenders against Collingwood. So I'm going to hop on the Fizz bandwagon, hashtag Fizz out, and go for Rory Laird. You may say not a massive call, but we're talking about the 2018 Rory Laird was a potential captain choice. He hasn't been this year. He's actually averaging in the 90s, but I think he will smash it, unlike he's doing with West Coast Eagles right now. Stuff you, Laird. You're letting DOS win. His average is well down, but I think he is the perfect type of player that is going to clean up around that Collingwood forward line. So the Captain Risky for round 22 will be Rory Laird.
Right, and if you want more captain options, check out the Draft Doctor's website to find the Statesman Skipper's article. You can also find a bunch of other articles to help your draft teams, including the Injury Report, A Dozen Deals by Sam Porter, Jono's Late Week Pickups, which can be pretty crucial for your finals matchups, and our Wednesday CBA's article looking at all the centre bounce attendances from the weekend, which can also be handy for your 2020 planning or your matchups this week as well. All right, so for all your AFL fantasy and Supercoach needs, go to thedraftdoctors.com.au. Any closing thoughts, lads, as we enter these final couple of weeks? Because that's all we got covered.
Yeah, anyone playing in round 23 finals, you're absolute monsters.
I love round 23 finals. I reckon it's an absolute ripper. But I would like to wish everyone all the best for their finals. Unfortunately, that'll be it for the season for me. But I'll see everyone in the off season.
And post your victories onto the Twitter page. We like to see that.
Okay. All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.